I want to continue talking about spending. The last few weeks we've been looking at it, and we've really been looking at the negative side of spending. At least it's the what I would consider to be the negative side of spending. That is spending too much, spending on expensive vehicles and things like that. But today I want to talk about the positive side of spending, the fun side of spending, when you can truly have fun, you can truly enjoy it, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with it. That is enjoying the fruit of our labor. I want to talk about that. I want to give some guidelines on that. And then I also want to talk about the fact that we can't take it with us, right? And I want to show you what the Bible has to say about that, as you're all aware. And then if we have time, I want to talk about lending, when to lend and when not to lend. That would be the next section of this study. I don't know if we'll get there or not. We'll see. So, enjoying the fruit of our labor. Like I said, this is the fun part. There's nothing wrong with enjoying some of the money that one has earned. Now, for some people, they need to hear this. People that are frugal, people that are future-oriented, like myself, people like that actually need to be told, it's okay to spend money. You can spend some of your money. You can enjoy some of your money. It's okay. You really can. You don't have to save everything. You don't have to be constantly thinking about the future and constantly laying up everything. You can lighten up. You can enjoy your life a little bit. Some people actually need to hear that, like me. And there are other people too. I've been listening to the Ramsey Show quite a bit. And there are people, especially people that started off deep in debt, and they go through the Ramsey baby steps, and they get out of debt, and they save up their emergency fund, and then they save up for a down payment on their house, and then they start investing 15%, and they start putting away extra money on their house, and they get the house paid off, and now they're the whole way to baby step 7, and they should be living like no other because they have lived like no other for years. But they're still in this mindset of scarcity. They still feel like they just are uncomfortable spending any money, enjoying any money, because they've been so long intensely trying to pay off debt and save up money. And he tells them, and he's right, lighten up. You know, you've done all the hard work. Now it's time to actually enjoy some of your money. You know, you can do that. So people need to hear this. Then there's others that, I mean, the thought has never even crossed their minds. If you say, it's okay to spend some of your money, and they're like, huh? I spend it all. What do you mean? Of course it's all right, right? Not only do I spend all my money, I spend a lot more than all my money because I go and put everything on credit cards that I can't afford, and I take out loans for stuff. I mean, they're like, wrong to spend my money? Are you kidding me? It's my money. Of course I can spend it. Every dime of it. So, that's why I'm covering this section. So there's extremes on both ends to be avoided. A man that spends everything he makes, I'm sorry, that saves everything he makes and never enjoys any of it has an unbalanced life. You got an unbalanced life. If all you do is save, 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 and you're always only concerned about the future and you never spend any money on yourself and you never enjoy any of your money, you have an unbalanced life. And there's a verse in Ecclesiastes that we'll get to in a little bit, which describes such a man. And I'll be honest with you, to at least a large extent, I pretty much lived that life for like almost my entire life. To be quite honest with you, I've probably lived an unbalanced life for most of my life. So I need to hear this like anybody else does. Spending money on things or experiences which bring enjoyment is not wrong. It's not wrong to buy things that bring you happiness. It's not wrong to spend money on experiences that bring you happiness. There's nothing wrong with that at all. I used to be of a mind years ago, this is a long time ago, when I was probably early 20s, I guess, like, you know, 20 years ago or something, that vacations are a complete waste of money. It's okay, they're nice to go on, but they're a total waste of money. You spent the money and you have nothing to show for it. You've got absolutely nothing. And what I failed to realize until I went on a trip with my mother and we drove around the country for a couple of weeks and saw all kinds of amazing stuff. We covered like 6,000 miles in 16 days or something like that. It was an awesome, incredible trip. Best $1,500 I ever spent because we split it. So it was like $1,500 a piece. We stayed in cheap hotels. We ate fast food or whatever. And I mean, we didn't hardly spend any money, really. We had an amazing time. But you know what? You could say, well, you got nothing to show for that. Oh, yes, I do. I've got synapses and brain neurons in my brain that still fire and still remind me of all those amazing things that we saw and all the fun that we had. I've got that for the rest of my life. So, yeah, it's worth it to spend money on experiences. That's if you have the money to spend, of course. The Bible teaches us that God has given us richly all things to enjoy. Let's look at 1 Timothy 6 and verse 17. 1 Timothy 6:17. But even though I know that, it's still hard for me. It would still be hard for me to shell out, you know, five or more grand on a vacation like that. It would still be, it'd be hard. But that's why I have sinking funds, right? You set money aside for things, and when it's there, then it's gone and it's not mine anymore. It's mine, but it doesn't. I can spend it. I'm all right. I could drop $5,000 on that vacation if I wanted to, if I had the money in the account to do it. Just like I can go out to eat. If there's money in the fun money account, I can go out to eat. If there's not, I don't go out to eat, right? And so when you're somebody like me, you need to have those kind of funds. Otherwise, you'll be like the old, what is the old poem? All work and no play makes Jack a dull boy, I think. Which doesn't even rhyme. It's a terrible saying. I've never liked that. I don't even know where it come from. But anyway, you end up like Jack. If you're like me and you don't have your sinking funds, you're going to end up like Jack. You're going to be a dull boy. 1 Timothy 6:17. Charge them. This is written to a preacher. So this is what I'm supposed to do as a preacher. Charge them that are rich in this world that they be not high-minded, so they don't want to be arrogant about it because they have wealth, nor trust in uncertain riches. They don't want to trust in that instead of God, but in the living God who giveth us richly all things to enjoy. God gives us richly, so lavishly, all things to enjoy. God actually gives us wealth and possessions and things to enjoy. There's nothing wrong with enjoying things in this world. You just have to do it in moderation, that's all. I'll get to that later. Solomon said that there's nothing better for a man than to eat and to drink and to enjoy the fruit of one's labor. Ecclesiastes 2 and verse 24. There's several verses in Ecclesiastes that we're going to look at here which say the same thing. And this is from a man that tried everything, he had everything, he experienced everything, and his conclusion was, number one, what I'm about to read you, but number two, more importantly, let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter, fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. If you miss out that last part of the book, if you miss out the part about fearing God and keeping his commandments, doing the rest of this stuff is not going to bring you any happiness. Enjoying the fruit of your labor, enjoy eating and drinking and being merry and all that stuff, it'll bring a little bit of temporary happiness for a short time, and then you're going to have this big empty void in your heart and in your life. It will not bring you ultimate happiness. You cannot make your way to a happy life by spending money on things and experiences. You can't. But if you fear God and keep his commandments, if that's your ultimate goal in your life, and that's where your life is really focused on, then enjoying the fruit of your labor is just icing on the cake, and that can make your life very enjoyable. Ecclesiastes 2 and verse 24. There is nothing better for a man than that he should eat and drink, and that he should make his soul enjoy good in his labor. This also I saw, that it was from the hand of God. Solomon says there's nothing better. And if you really think about it, what in life, there's a few things, maybe, but how many things are there in life that are more enjoyable than eating and drinking, at least if you enjoy eating and drinking, as I do? That makes you sound like an alcoholic if you say you enjoy drinking, but that's not what I'm talking about. I mean, I do enjoy drinking wine, which I don't do very often, but anyway, what is more enjoyable in life than eating good food and drinking good drinks? You know, a few things. You can probably think of a few things, but not very many, right? That ranks up there very highly on the scale, doesn't it? And the Bible actually calls this good. It is enjoying good. Eating and drinking in moderation is good. It's actually a Bible. The Bible teaches it's a good thing. I'll give you a verse. Psalm 104 and verse 28. Psalm 104, 28. It's got to be done in moderation. It has to be in its place. Of course, it can be abused, and you can overeat, you can overdrink. It can become the consuming thing in your life where all you can think about is the next restaurant you're going to go visit or something. But in its place, it's a good thing. Psalm 104 and verse 28. This is a psalm about how God provides. And it's talking here from verse 21 down, how God provides for the animals. And it says there in verse 28, that thou givest them, they gather. This is the food that God gives the animals. Thou openest thine hand, they are filled with good. See, the food that God gives the animals is called good. So there's nothing wrong with enjoying good food, good drink. I love good food. Believe it or not, and this may sound sacrilegious to you, this may sound even blasphemous, and I hope it doesn't, but I can worship God at a good restaurant. My God is not my belly. That's not what I'm talking about. But I can order a good meal at a good restaurant and thoroughly enjoy it and thank God with every single bite and have joy and gladness and gratitude in my heart for every single bite. This is an amazing meal. I love this. I am having such a good time. And especially when you're with people that enjoy good food too, it's a wonderful experience. And I can literally worship God in a restaurant. Good food is such a blessing. Let me remember, it says in 1 Timothy 6:17 that God hath given us richly all things to enjoy. Well, then compare that with 1 Timothy 4:4. That when God gives us these good things, this good food to enjoy, as long as we're thankful for it, we can enjoy it. And it's a righteous, godly thing to do. 1 Timothy 4 and verse 4, for every creature of God is good and nothing to be refused if it be received with thanksgiving. Every creature, this is talking about the creatures that you eat, you know, meat. It's all good if it be received with thanksgiving. That's why I say you go and you enjoy a good meal. And you not only do you go through the motions of saying, thank you, Lord, for this food. Bless it to the nourishment of my body. Blah, blah, blah. That's nice, right? That's good. You should do that. And you should mean it from your heart. But when you take each bite and you're like, thank you, God, this is so good. Every single bite. You're literally worshiping God at a restaurant. And don't get me wrong. I don't go to expensive restaurants. Right? Very rarely. I've never been to a fine dining experience. That would be tough. I think the only way I could enjoy that is if somebody gave me a gift card for it, for the restaurant, and the gift card covered my full meal, and I didn't have to skimp and like pick on some appetizer on the thing or something to eat. If I could just get whatever I wanted and the gift card covered the whole thing, then and only then I think I could enjoy a fine dining experience. Just to shell out, you know, $100 of entree or something like that, I don't think it could be that good. Even $50, I don't think it could be that good. I don't. Maybe it could, but I don't know. But my wife and I like finding good little, mostly ethnic restaurants, because American food is usually boring. Little ethnic restaurants for like $15 a plate or less. You find this amazing, wonderful food and thoroughly enjoy it. And we found several of those places around over the years. Found a great Korean place, a great Iraqi place, a great Thai place, just amazing, really good food, other Mediterranean places and so on. So you can find it. You just got to look. You got to find the right place. And especially if you go at lunchtime, you can get a lot better deal on it. You can have amazing food for not a, you know, a crazy price. But anyway, let's get back to what Solomon had to say about this. It's the gift of God to enjoy the good of one's labor. Ecclesiastes 3 and verse 13. Same page that we were just on back there in Ecclesiastes, if you have the same layout as my Bible anyway. Ecclesiastes 3:13. And also that every man should eat and drink and enjoy the good of all his labor. It is the gift of God. There you go. It's literally every time you enjoy a good meal, just think of it as God giving you a gift. God gave you the gift card. You think about it. He gave you the money to buy it. Well, you just think about it. He gave you the gift card to the restaurant. Ecclesiastes 5:18-19. like I said, Solomon just, he says this repeatedly. Obviously, he's trying to get a point across, isn't he? Ecclesiastes 5, 18 and 19. Behold that which I have seen. It is good and comely for one to eat and to drink and to enjoy the good of all his labor that he taketh under the sun all the days of his life, which God giveth him, for it is his portion. It's his portion. It's good and comely. It's beautiful. It's suitable for one to eat and drink, to enjoy the good of his labor. It's your portion. If God's divided that portion out to you and he's given it to you, saying, here, enjoy it. For you to reject that portion and say, no, I can't spend money. I can't ever spend money going out to eat. I can't ever spend money on anything that I enjoy. You're rejecting the portion that God's given you. It's good to eat and to be merry. And those two things go together. Ecclesiastes 8 and verse 15. Ecclesiastes 8:15. Then I commended mirth, which is joy, happiness. Then I commended mirth, because a man hath no better thing under the sun than to eat and to drink and to be merry, for that shall abide with him of his labor the days of his life, which God giveth him under the sun. So yeah, it's good. Good to eat, drink, and be merry. And isn't that a lot of the source of our mirth and joy, is eating and drinking good things? Isn't it interesting that, have you ever been to a party, ever, where there wasn't food and drink at the party? What kind of a party is that? Have you ever been to a birthday party where there wasn't at least a cake or something? Right? There's always food and drink at parties. Get-togethers always have food and drink. They are so entwined in our lives. That's the way that God has designed it. That's one of the things that makes this evil world a little easier to get through, is enjoyable things like that. And it's good to eat, to enjoy good food and drink with one's wife. Let's look at Ecclesiastes 9, 7 through 9. Go thy way, eat thy bread with joy, and drink thy wine with a merry heart, for God now accepteth thy works. The Bible literally just commanded you to drink wine. The fundamentalists say you can't ever drink wine, you're going to go to hell. God says drink thy wine, and not only don't even just drink it, drink it with a merry heart. Drink it and be happy about it and be thankful for it and be joyful in it. Now, if you don't like wine, that's fine. But let me tell you what, this is a commandment that I have no problem keeping. Okay? No problem keeping. Drink thy wine with a merry heart. Let thy garments always be white, and let thy head lack no ointment. Live joyfully with the wife whom thou lovest all the days of the life of thy vanity. See, our lives are vanity. They're futile. They're meaningless. They're just so vain and empty, right? If you don't have the Lord. But this is one way that you can add a little bit of enjoyment to this otherwise depressing and vain life. Enjoy it with your wife, your husband, which he hath given thee under the sun all the days of thy vanity, for that is thy portion in this life and in thy labor which thou takest under the sun. That's one of the reasons why you work, so that you can enjoy the fruit of your labor. But on the other hand, it's foolish and sad to constantly work and bereave your soul of good. If all you do in your life is just work, 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 and save, 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 and never enjoy any of it, you're going to have a miserable existence, most likely. I mean, there are a few people that are just addicted to it and I guess just love it, but for the most part, you're going to be missing out on a lot of good in life. Ecclesiastes 4:8. And I remember reading this verse years ago, back when before I was in the ministry, when I was working out there in the world. And I read this verse, and I'm looking at it, I'm like, that verse is me right there. I remember calling up my pastor and be like, what the heck am I doing? Right here, this verse describes me to a T. There is one alone. That was back when I was single. There is one alone, and there is not a second. Yea, he hath neither child nor brother. Yet is there no end of all his labor. Neither is his eye satisfied with riches, neither saith he, for whom do I labor and bereave my soul of good? This is also vanity, yea, it is a sore travail. That's a sad thing. Especially if you got some guy that he's just so busy with work, he doesn't even bother to try to get married, doesn't want to have kids because he's so busy with work or whatever, and just working and working and amassing up wealth and riches. Like, for what? For what? It's vanity. It's a sore travail. That's a sad deal. It's sad for anybody to work so much that you bereave your soul of good. And that's basically what happened to me a couple of years ago. I mean, it's what happened to me for years prior to that. And it wasn't because I was working to get wealthy. I was just working too much. Just working way too much and just burnt myself out to the point where my body had to explain to me that you need to change. You need to stop. And I've gotten better at that, thankfully. The Lord's been merciful. You see, you can make yourself rich and yet have nothing if you don't enjoy any of it and if you don't use it to bless others. Let's look at Proverbs 13 and verse 7. Proverbs 13 and verse 7. I know I talked in the very beginning of this series, I talked about whether money buys happiness. And a little bit of money does, right? I mean, air conditioning makes you happy, right? You know, that kind of things. But money, and especially a lot of money, doesn't. And I've been watching, I came across this YouTube channel. It's called The School of Hard Knocks. It's this young kid, and he interviews millionaires and billionaires. He goes all over the place. And he just walks up to them just on the street. He goes to places where they are, you know, L.A., Miami, New York, whatever. Dubai, and he just kind of walks up and just says, "Hey, excuse me, sir. How old were you when you made your first million or whatever?" And usually, sometimes that'll just catch them and they'll talk to him. But anyway, he interviews these very wealthy people, and he often asks them, "Does money buy happiness?" And every one of them, knee jerk reaction. They don't even have to think about it. Heck no. Every one of them says that. No way. Absolutely not. These are millionaires and billionaires. Nope, money does not buy happiness. And one of them said, money beyond a certain point buys you misery. He said, beyond about $1 million a year of income, he's like, that buys you misery. Because at that point, people know that you have enough to make a material difference in their lives. And then all of a sudden, everybody's coming at you. And anyway, so this verse will tell us here that money does not buy happiness, especially, large amounts of it. Proverbs 13 and verse 7, there is that maketh himself rich, yet hath nothing. There is that maketh himself poor, yet hath great riches. You can make yourself rich, but if you don't ever enjoy any of it, it's as if you have nothing, right? What's the difference? What's the difference if you've got a few million dollars in your bank account and you don't enjoy a penny of it? It's the same as you having nothing in your bank account, right? Except I guess you don't have to worry about, something happening and you not being able to cover it or whatever. But other than that, like as far as your material existence in this world, you'd be just as if you had nothing. And if you don't use it to help others, if you don't use it to bless others, yeah, you can be rich, you can be wealthy, but it's as if you have nothing. Your life is really devoid of meaning. Your life is lacking something majorly if you work to get rich and you don't bless others. And we've already talked about that, the importance of giving. Now, you want to remember two things when it comes to enjoying your money. Two things. These are two caveats. All right, so somebody might hear what I've said so far and just can't wait to get through that door and go out and blow some money. All right? So before you go on a spending spree, remember these two things. Now, the first thing is going to be like a big thing with a bunch of things, and then the other thing is going to be a really simple, easy thing. The first thing you want to remember is to wait to enjoy the fruit of your labor until you are, number one, out of debt, except for your home, and you have a fully funded emergency fund of 3 to 6 months of living expenses. Now, I definitely recommend the 6 month end of that, but at least 3 to 6 months of living expenses. That's the first thing. It is not time to enjoy the fruit of your labor if you have debt outside of your mortgage, and if you don't have 3 to 6 months of living expenses saved up. This is not the time to go enjoy the fruit of your labor. This is time to get serious, get out of debt, get your emergency fund saved up, because you are in danger. So if you have any debt outside of your 15-year mortgage, any debt, credit cards, student loans, personal loans, car loans, home equity loans, loans at the furniture store, loans at whatever, payday loans, whatever you have, I don't know. I mean, I don't even probably know half the ways there are to borrow money. But if you have any loans of any kind outside of your 15-year mortgage, you should be spending every single spare cent to pay off those loans as quickly as possible. This is no time for going out to eat. This is no time for enjoying yourself. This is no time for anything except paying off debt, period. In this stage, you need to be intense about paying off debt and getting your emergency fund fully funded. I'll talk about how to do that. I've touched on it in the past, but I'll go through the debt snowball and all that near the end of this series here in a while. But at this point, you need to be intense, okay? You should not be enjoying the fruit of your labor until all of your non-mortgage debt is paid off and you have a fully funded emergency fund. This means no going out to eat, no going out to the movies, no entertainment, no vacations, no getting your nails done, no shopping, no Netflix, no cable, no golfing, no coffee shops, no unnecessary spending, period. That's what it means. Now, you can choose to do this or not. If you don't do it, well, then be a debt slave the rest of your life. You know, that's up to you. But if you want to get ahead, and if you want to be able to actually enjoy the fruit of your labor, get those debts paid off first. Get that emergency fund saved up, and then you can enjoy the fruit of your labor and truly enjoy it. Because in the back of your mind, you're thinking, wow, I've got all this debt. I got this debt to pay off. I got this card. I got that card. I got this loan. I got that loan. Don't really have money saved up. What if I lose my job? What if something happens? You know, yeah, I mean, dinner's a lot of fun when you got all those thoughts running through your mind, isn't it? That's not time to be going out to dinner. That's time to be intense and get all these debts paid off. Now, once you're out of debt, except for your 15-year mortgage, and you have 3 to 6 months of living expenses in an emergency fund, and you're investing 15% of your gross income for retirement, all things that we've already talked about, then you can loosen up and enjoy some of the fruit of your labor. That's the point when you start enjoying some of your money. Debt's gone, emergency fund is funded, and you're putting 15% of your gross income in retirement, then you can start to enjoy some of the fruit of your labor. You can start to enjoy some of your money. At this point, you go from being intense to intentional with your money. You don't just start spending it with abandon at this point, or you're going to be back where you were before, right? You don't go crazy with your money, but you go from being intense in not allowing yourself any pleasure to lightening up, and now you're intentional. I got a budget. I put this amount of money for each of these things in my life, and one of those things that I put money towards is fun. Going out to eat, entertainment, whatever I want to do, right? You do it intentionally. And it's a good idea. I definitely recommend it. Ramsey recommends it. That at this stage, you're putting extra money away on that 15-year mortgage every month to pay it off early at this stage. Because the faster you pay that thing off, the less interest you pay, the sooner you are free and worry-free when it comes to that. So it's still a good idea to be putting extra money on that mortgage. But it's not like every extra penny you have in your budget has to go on that mortgage, right? You don't have to do that. You can lighten up. You can enjoy yourself some. So that's the first thing to remember about enjoying the fruit of your labor. The second thing is exercising moderation. And I've already talked about this, but let me give you the verse in Philippians 4 and verse 5. Philippians 4 and verse 5. It'd be a really dumb thing to go through that whole process, get debt free, get in good financial shape, and then just go out and time to have fun. And that's what some people do. They've just felt like, I've sacrificed for so long, now I deserve this. Well, you know, yeah, you can enjoy a little bit of it, but do you deserve to go out and blow every spare penny you have on having fun, and then all of a sudden now I don't have enough to pay for the water heater when it goes out and the HVAC when it goes out, and pretty soon, what do you know, I've got credit card debt, now I've got a home equity loan, I've got this and that and the other thing, right? You end up right back in the same pitch you came out of, so you need to exercise moderation. Philippians 4 and verse 5. Let your moderation be known unto all men. The Lord is at hand. Now, after you pay off your home and you're completely 100% debt free, and you're investing 15% of your gross income into retirement, then you can loosen up even more and you can start living and giving like no one else. So because you lived like no one else for so long. That's when you can really lighten up. When the house is paid off, you're completely debt-free, and you're socking away that 15% in retirement, then, hey, enjoy yourself. Chances are you spent years to get to that point, and now it's time to enjoy the fruit of your labor. But most people do it completely the opposite. Most people have all their fun in their early years, their 20s, their 30s, their 40s, their 50s, and then all of a sudden they get to their 60s, and they're like, oh, crap, I don't have any money saved. I still got a mortgage on my house. What am I going to do, right? Do it the right way. Sacrifice in the beginning, in the early days, when money and time and interest are on your side, and then you can enjoy the latter half of your life and truly enjoy it. And then, as I said, money, time, and interest are all on your side. Now, the Bible teaches us in many places that we can't take it with us, right? So it's good to save, but if that's the only thing that matters to you, you're going to be exercising futility here, because you are amassing something that you're not going to be able to keep in the end anyway. We will leave this world with exactly what we brought into it, and that is nothing. There's several verses that teach this. 1 Timothy 6 and verse 7. 1 Timothy 6 and verse 7. For we brought nothing into this world, and it is certain we can carry nothing out. There are very few things in this life that are certain. Almost nothing. You know, death and taxes, as they say. And this is part of that. It is certain you'll carry nothing out. That is a guarantee. Whatever else happens between now and the end of your life is uncertain, pretty much. But one thing is certain. When you die, how much or how little you have does not carry on with you to the next life. Ecclesiastes 5 and verse 15. But don't take from that, well, then, what's the point of saving? What's the point of laying up, right? I may as well try to organize my life in such a way that I spend it all right before I die. That's stupid thinking, and I will give you a couple of reasons for that in just a minute. Ecclesiastes 5 and verse 15. Ecclesiastes 5:15. As he came forth of his mother's womb, naked shall he return to go as he came, and shall take nothing of his labor which he may carry away in his hand. Now, what'd you come into this world with? Nothing. You had no clothes, you had no possessions, you had no money. You didn't have anything, right? You came into this world with absolutely nothing except for your physical body. And you're going to leave this world with less than that. You're not even going to take your physical body with you when you leave this world. You'll come back to get it later, but you're even going to leave that behind. You're going to leave here with no material thing. Your immaterial parts are going to go. And everything material is going to stay here. And then it's all going to be burned up except for your body, which will be resurrected. But the rest of all this stuff that you have amassed, it'll all be burned up someday. That's what Peter talks about in 2 Peter chapter 3. One more. Psalm 49 and verse 17. And this is why it can be pretty depressing for successful and wealthy people who have spent their entire lives amassing fortunes or big companies, or they've done great things. And guess what? It's when you die, it's all going to be somebody else's. It's all gone. And if that's all you have, you're going to die probably a bitter, angry, resentful, disappointed man if that's all you have. Because you think, what was the point? I did all this. I built all this. I made a name for myself, and now I'm just gone. And in a few years, nobody's ever going to remember I existed. And it is. Life is vain if you don't have the Lord. If you don't have eternity in the afterlife, life is vain. Psalm 49 and verse 17. This is talking about the wicked. For when he dieth, he shall carry nothing away. His glory shall not descend after him. There are no rich men in hell. You know that? There's no rich men in hell. I mean, granted, the rich guy that died in the with Lazarus and the rich man, I mean, he's called the rich man, but he wasn't rich in hell. He had nothing in hell, right? He was rich before he got there. But you can't transfer any of the funds. You get divested of all your wealth before you go to hell. Now, there are rich people in heaven, but it's not because they carried it with them, right? It's because, you know, God makes you rich after you get there. You remember Steve Jobs when he died here several years ago? Founder of Apple, billionaire, right? Extremely successful man. He died with nothing more than a homeless bum. I mean, yeah, he had lots of assets to his name, but when he's dead and laying in the grave, what's he have? No different than a homeless bum. I mean, he might have been buried in a nice suit and the homeless guy was buried in some rags or something, but what's that matter when you're dead? Job tells us that we came naked into this world and we're going to leave the same way. You remember that verse, Job 1 and verse 21? Job 1:21. And said, naked came I out of my mother's womb, and naked shall I return thither. The Lord gave, and the Lord hath taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. Now, there is a warning here to be issued about laying up wealth and not being rich toward God, because if you do that, God might actually take you out of this world and your wealth will become another's. Luke 12:16-21. We've been over this verse before. Luke 12:16-21. So not only don't you get to take it with you, but if you live only for yourself and you're not rich toward God, you might check out early, and then it'll be taken and given to somebody else anyway. You might not even get to enjoy it in this life as you would have if you're not rich toward God during this life. Luke 12:16-21. And he spake a parable unto them, saying, the ground of a certain rich man brought forth plentifully. And he thought within himself, saying, what shall I do? Because I have no room where to bestow my fruits. And he said, this will I do. I will pull down my barns and build greater, and there will I bestow all my fruits and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, thou hast much goods laid up for many years. Take thine ease, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said unto him, thou fool, this night thy soul shall be required of thee. Then whose shall those things be which thou hast provided? And here's the most important verse in that passage. So is he that layeth up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God. That was really the guy's problem. As I read that, the guy's problem was not that he was prosperous and wealthy and that his fields were producing tons and tons of fruit, and he just so much that he didn't have anywhere to put them, and so he built bigger barns to fill them up. That wasn't the problem. I imagine if that man would have taken the first fruits of that crop and given it to the Lord, he'd have lived to tell about it. If he'd have been rich toward God, he'd have been fine. And guess what? He'd have still had barns that were full, and probably even fuller. Because that's what happens. Remember what it says in Proverbs 3? Honor the Lord with thy substance, and with the first fruits of all that increase, so shall thy barns be filled with plenty, and thy presses shall burst out with new wine. This guy could have had even more barns full, probably, if he'd have just been rich toward God. But he wasn't. And even his worldly possessions were taken from him. Let me give you one more. Jeremiah 17:11. Jeremiah 17:11. As the partridge sitteth on eggs and hatcheth them not, so he that getteth riches and not by rights. So this is somebody that's done something that is fraudulent or theft or something like that. So he that getteth riches and not by right shall leave them in the midst of his days, and at his end shall be a fool. He'll leave them in the midst of his days. Now, I guess he could go bankrupt in the midst of his days, possibly. Or he could be cut off. He could be killed in the midst of his days. Remember what it says in the Psalms? Bloody and deceitful men shall not live out half their days. Well, so saying it appears that the same is true with this guy that gets riches, but not by right. There's other verses in the Proverbs that talk about that too. He that hasteth to be rich hath an evil eye and doesn't know that evil shall come upon him, right? So that can happen. Now, as I mentioned, while we can't take our money with us when we die, it is foolish to try to spend it all before we leave this world. And I've told you the story, I know. I need to have a bigger repertoire of illustrations, I guess. But I told you the story of the guy that I used to know who told me that his goal was that when he'd spent his last penny, that he and his wife would get killed in a fiery car crash or something like that. That was his goal. He was halfway kidding, but probably really not. He probably really wanted to enjoy every penny that he had, and the thought of dying in this world and then leaving it to somebody else and not enjoying what he'd worked for, he didn't like that. He didn't want to leave anything to anybody, according to him anyway. That's really foolish, really stupid. A couple of reasons for this. First of all, a Christian should leave an inheritance to his children and his grandchildren. Right? That requires having money that you didn't enjoy yourself after you die, right? I'll talk about leaving an inheritance later on in this study. So that's the first reason. If for no other reason, don't blow all your money, because a good man leaves an inheritance to his children and his grandchildren. Secondly, as I've mentioned before in this study, you don't know how long you're going to live, right? If you had a crystal ball and you knew the day of your death, then you could probably reasonably map it out so that you spent almost every penny until you died, except you still wouldn't know what might happen prior to your death. You might have big medical bills, you might have other problems, who knows what. You know, but theoretically you can say, okay, I'm gonna die at 72 and I'm X age right now, I've got X amount of money, I can divide that out, I can figure out, you know, I'm making a little bit of interest. I can get it right down to on my dying breath, I can spend my last penny. If you knew when you were going to die, that'd be the dumbest thing in the world. I mean, what kind of an idiot would do that anyway? But theoretically, you could try to do that. But the thing is, you don't know when you're going to die. You could die at 65, or you could die at 95. Theoretically, you could die earlier or later than that, even. And of course, you know, people die, especially after they got the COVID shot. I mean, people drop over dead at any age these days. You know, coincidence. Coincidence is the number one killer these days. But anyway, but you could reasonably die between 65 and 95, right? Most people live a little longer than 65. You know, most people live into their 70s. Most people don't live into their 90s, but it's not uncommon. I'm not telling you anything you don't know. My grandmother lived to almost 95 months away. My great-grandmother lived to 95. I've known lots of people that have lived that long. Phil Yonker's parents just died here this last year at 98 and 99 years old, almost 100. It happens. It's, you know, it's not unheard of. Or you could die at 65, you know, who knows? You know, my stepdad died at 62, my grandfather died at 61, right? I mean, I've got family members that have died all over the place, you know, mid-60s to mid-90s. You have no idea how long you might last. So it would be completely insane to think, well, you know, the average age is 77, I'm going to calculate it out and spend all my money by 77, and then you'll live another 20 years, and then what are you going to do? Dumbest thing in the world, right? Personally, I would rather die with $1 million in the bank that I never got to enjoy than to be a $1 burden on my family or on society prior to my death. And I mean that. I totally mean that in all sincerity. I'd rather have $1 million in my bank account that I never got to enjoy rather than be a $1 burden on anybody before I die. And honestly, you know, who knows? You don't know the future. But I hope to die with a sizable amount of wealth. And that'll mean three things, right? That will mean that I was not a burden on others. That's a really good thing. That's a good thing. I don't ever want to be a burden on anybody. So that'll mean if I die with a sizable amount of wealth, that means I was not a burden on others. It means, number two, that I lived wisely. And that's a good thing. We should want to do that. And number three, it'll mean that I was able to bless others after my death. And all of those things are good things. And as I mentioned before, you know, if you're going to live on your own savings, it takes a lot. I mean, you have to have a sizable amount of wealth, especially when you don't know how long you're going to live. So it's not unreasonable. I think everybody should, that should be everybody's goal. Okay, we still have some time. Let's get into lending. So far in this study, I've been trying to do it roughly in the order in which it should happen. I got a couple of things a little out of order. But we talked about earning. That's what, of course, you got to do that first. And then saving. That should be the next thing. And giving. I should have put giving before saving, but you understand. So earning, giving, saving. And then we looked at investing, right? And then spending. And that's pretty much the order that it should happen in. Earning, giving, saving, investing, and then spending. And then the next thing would be lending. Because once you have done all this, and once you have invested and saved, and you have some money laid up, then you're in a position to lend to help out others, if that's, you know, the wise thing to do. It's not always the wise thing to do, and we'll talk about that. So we should lend or give to the poor when they are in need according to biblical standards. We've talked about this already. It tells us in Psalm 37 and verse 26 that a righteous man is ever merciful and lends. And we can conclude just with a very, very small amount of reasoning that he lends to the poor. Psalm 37 and verse 26. He is ever merciful. This is talking about a righteous man. He's ever merciful and lendeth, and his seed is blessed. Now, why do I say we can reason that he's lending to the poor? Have you ever loaned money to a rich man before? Do you typically loan money to wealthy people? Who needs to borrow money? Poor people. Those are the only people that borrow money. Well, I mean, I guess some rich people are stupid enough and they think they can make money by borrowing money and whatever. Don't do it. I don't recommend it. But there's lots of crap on YouTube out there telling you how to get rich with no money. You don't need any money. You can invest in real estate with no money. You can do all this with no money. Don't worry about it. Use other people's money and blah, blah, blah. Don't listen to him. You'll go broke. It's the stupidest idea ever. But anyway, so he's ever merciful. He lends to the poor because they're the ones who need a loan. In the law of Moses, God required loans to be made to fellow Israelites and to be forgiven every 7 years. This is a very interesting economic system. Deuteronomy 15, 1 through 2. So back in, under the law of Moses in Israel, they were required to loan money to their poor brethren, and then every 7 years, the slate gets wiped clean. So theoretically, you could loan somebody money in year 6, month 11, and a month later, that's forgiven. It's all wiped clean. That's how it worked back then. Deuteronomy 15, 1 through 2. At the end of every 7 years, thou shalt make a release. And this is the manner of the release. Every creditor that lendeth aught unto his neighbor shall release it. He shall not exact it of his neighbor or of his brother, because it is called the Lord's release. Every 7 years. Now, if a man had a poor brother in Israel who was in need, he was to open his hand wide unto him and lend him sufficient for his need. Let's look at verses 7 and 8. If there be among you a poor man of one of thy brethren within any of thy gates in thy land, which the Lord thy God giveth thee, thou shalt not harden thine heart, nor shut thine hand from thy poor brother. Thou shalt open thine hand wide unto him, and shalt surely lend him sufficient for his need in that he wanteth. And we've already looked at that, right? When you're loaning or giving money, it's for need. It is not for a new truck or something like that. It's for need. Food, clothing, shelter, medical care, right? Those are basically your four needs. Utilities would be a need as well. Now, if the seventh year was right around the corner, they were still supposed to loan to the poor brother. Right? Now, this would be the tough one, right? Verses 9 through 11. Beware that there be not a thought in thy wicked heart. See, God knows how we think. Saying, the seventh year, the year of release, is at hand. It's close by. And thine eye be evil against thy poor brother, and thou givest him not, and he cry unto the Lord against thee, and it be sin unto thee. Thou shalt surely give him, and thine heart shall not be grieved when thou givest unto him. Remember, God loveth a cheerful giver. The heart shouldn't be grieved when you give. Because that for this thing the Lord thy God shall bless thee in all thy works, and in all that thou puttest thine hand unto. You're going to be blessed for it. Don't worry about it. You loan money to this poor brother. Even if you're doing it in the sixth year and you know he's not going to pay me back within this time and it's going to be all returned and I'm never going to get my money. Don't worry about it. God will take care of you. He'll bless you in all your works. For the poor shall never cease out of the land. Therefore I command thee, saying, thou shalt open thine hand wide unto thy brother and thy poor, to thy poor and to thy needy in thy land. So yeah, if it was the sixth year, the 11th month, you can't say, come back next month. I'll help you out. Right? No. You help him out then. And you trust the Lord that he'll take care of it. That's how it worked back then anyway. We're not under that law, per se. It's an interesting law, though, that's for sure. Let me tell you what. There wouldn't be any 30-year mortgages in Israel. There wouldn't be any 15-year mortgages in Israel. There probably wouldn't be any less than 7-year mortgages, I suppose, by the banksters anyway, because they probably don't like that year of release thing. They kind of want to get paid, you know. Now remember that verse in Psalm 37, the righteous man is ever merciful and lends. Even at times when he knows he won't be paid back. Right? He's ever merciful. Even when he either knows for sure or he's probably suspicious, like, I probably won't be paid back. He's ever merciful. Lending to people that are actually in need according to the Bible's criteria. And Jesus taught that we should lend hoping for nothing in return, which is called being merciful. Luke 6:34 through 36. Have you ever loaned money to somebody and you pretty much know, I'm not going to get paid back? I have. I mean, I've pretty much, not like, as soon as I do it, I know I'm not going to get paid back. But this verse just comes to mind. That's all right. If it's somebody that's in need, that's all right. Luke 6:34 through 36. Jesus says, if ye lend to them of whom ye hope to receive, what thank have ye? For sinners also lend to sinners to receive as much again. I mean, is J.P. Morgan and Citigroup and Bank of America, are these righteous, wonderful people because they lend to creditors and hoping and demanding to get paid back again? Are they virtuous people? Of course not, right? I mean, nothing virtuous about loaning money to somebody and hoping to get paid back, or assuming you're going to get paid back, especially if it's at interest. I mean, there's nothing virtuous about that whatsoever. But love ye your enemies and do good and lend, hoping for nothing again. And your reward shall be great, and ye shall be the children of the highest, for he is kind unto the unthankful. Into the evil. Be ye therefore, linking it back to the previous thought, be ye therefore merciful as your Father is also merciful. It's merciful to loan money to somebody hoping not to get paid back again. Again, this is only to the poor who are in genuine biblical need. Okay? And there are other criteria too that I will talk about when you don't loan money to people. I'm not telling you to loan money to anybody that asks for it, depending. There are other criteria the Bible gives. But as I said the other day, giving is better than lending. And I think that there's a couple of verses here in the Bible that definitely suggest this. The word order, the priority here suggests to me that giving is better than lending. I mean, wouldn't it be better? Of course. Would you rather get a loan or a gift? If you're in need, if you're a poor person in need, you're in genuine need, would you rather get a loan or a gift? A gift! Right? Well, then that means to me that giving is better than lending. There's a better blessing involved in giving than lending, I imagine. Because lending, you know, there's a chance you might get paid back. Giving, you're not getting paid back. Matthew 5 and verse 42. And straightway, no, that's Mark 5:42. That didn't look right. Matthew 5:42. Give to him that asketh thee, and from him that would borrow of thee, turn not thou away. So he lists giving first. Give to him that asketh thee, and if somebody asks you to borrow, don't turn him away either. So just the word order there, you know, lends me to believe that it's probably a better thing, better to give than to lend. Luke 6 and verse 38, there's definitely a huge blessing when it comes to lending, or giving, I mean. Luke 6:38, been over this verse a time or two. Give, and it shall be given unto you. Good measure, pressed down and shaken together and running over, shall men give into your bosom. For with what measure ye meet, withal it shall be measured to you again. See, the thing is, whether you give or you lend, you're going to get paid back. One way or the other, the Lord's going to pay you back. The person might not pay you back. You lend money and you don't get paid back, the Lord will pay you back. That's what he said in Deuteronomy. He blessed you in all your works, right? He'll take care of you. And if you give money, well, you're definitely not going to get paid back. I've given money to people before, and then they want to pay it back. I'm like, it's a gift. It's a gift. It's not a loan. Like, no, that's not how it works. But God will pay you back. God will pay you back. Now, I'd say if you can't afford to give someone money, then you probably shouldn't lend it to them. If you can't afford, so if somebody says, hey, I need to borrow $500. Just ask yourself, and this is truly a poor person in need, ask yourself, can I afford to give him $500? Just a gift, I'm never going to see it again. You know, just here you go, take it. Can I afford to do that? If you can afford to do that, you can afford to lend them the $500. But if you say, boy, you know, I really can't. If I don't get paid back, you know, if I just gave that to him, I'm going to need this money in the near future, you can't afford to lend it to him. I'll pay you back in a week or two or three. No. Assume you never get paid back. If you can't afford to give it to him, you can't afford to lend it to him because you're probably not going to get paid back. And that's just a fact. Many loans to friends and family become gifts because they will not repay them. Now, they either become like de facto gifts, where they're not technically a gift, you still think I need to get paid back, but it's a de facto gift, right? And if you're smart, it'll become a de jure gift. You understand the difference de facto and de jure? De facto is something that is not in law, but it's just kind of the way that it ends up being. De jure is it's actually by law, okay? So if you're smart, you'll just tell the person it's forgiven. If you know they're not going to pay back, they couldn't pay you back, or they just won't pay you back, for your own sake, just tell them it's forgiven. I don't care if someday if you can pay me back, don't. It is forgiven. And that will give you peace of mind. That will stop you from being resentful against the person for not paying you back. But most, I think a lot of gifts, I mean, you know, my own experience is limited, obviously, but from my own experience, yeah, most loans turn into gifts. And you just have to be ready for that. And that's okay. I mean, loan hoping to get nothing, you know, nothing in return, like Jesus said. So it's not a big deal. You just have to have that mindset that, you know, it's probably not going to be paid back. That's not always the case. I mean, I've loaned money to people and they pay me back, right? It's not a guarantee, but for some reason, there's a lot of people, if they borrow money from family, they just think because it's family, I don't have to pay it back. I've seen this happen to other people. And that's evil. That is wicked. I mean, to think, oh, they're family, I don't have to pay them back. If you should pay anybody back, it should be your family, if they want paid back. I mean, if you told them you'd pay them back. So like I think I basically mentioned this before, I recommend saving yourself the hassle and the hard feelings and just giving them money if they're truly in need rather than loaning them money. Because you're probably going to end up giving it to them anyway. And then, like I said, you're not going to have the hassle or the hard feelings about it. I have more to say about that a little bit later here in the study, so I'll reserve that for a minute from now. The Bible teaches that when we give to the poor, we won't lack. Remember that? Proverbs 28:27. Proverbs 28:27. Just recovering a little ground that we've been over before. He that giveth unto the poor shall not lack, but he that hideth his eyes shall have many a curse. And Proverbs 19:17. Proverbs 19:17. He that hath pity upon the poor lendeth unto the Lord, and that which he hath given will he pay him again. So I said, you get paid back, whether you give or loan, you'll get paid back. Now, righteous people lend and give to the poor, but the wicked are stingy and will not. The wicked aren't going to help out anybody, loan or gift. Proverbs 29 and verse 7. The righteous considereth the cause of the poor, but the wicked regardeth not to know it. Remember James 2, when you see somebody that's destitute of food and clothing, and you say, oh, be warm and filled. Remember that? What good doth it profit? You know, James says, faith without works is dead. So yeah, you don't see somebody that's in genuine need and say, I'll pray for you, brother. Not if you are in a position to help, you help him. John said in 1 John 3:17 that he that hath this world's good and shutteth up his bowels of compassion, how dwelleth the love of God in him? Now, one really important thing to remember about lending, and I know I've mentioned this before also, is that when we do so, we do it with discretion. Psalm 112 and verse 5. This is probably the most important thing that you can remember when it comes to loaning money, is doing it with discretion. Because you will not only harm yourself if you loan without discretion, because you don't get paid back, right? But you will also harm the other person if you loan without discretion. Because giving or loaning money to somebody who's a fool with money is not helping that person. It's actually harming that person. It's hurting that person. Psalm 112 and verse 5. A good man showeth favor and lendeth. He will guide his affairs with discretion. Discretion is ability to discern or distinguish what is right, befitting, or advisable, especially as regards one's own conduct or action. The quality of being discreet, discernment, prudence, sagacity, circumspection, sound judgment. So in other words, the man that loans money does so with prudence, with discernment. He thinks about what this loan is for. He thinks, is this going to help the person? It's going to harm the person? Is this going to be too much of a strain on my own finances or whatever, right? He uses discernment, discretion when he loans money. A good man lends to others with discretion, not with abandon. He doesn't just give money to anybody that asks him without first looking into the circumstances of the situation. He will carefully consider if the man asking for a loan needs the money and if loaning him the money will make him better off or worse off in the long run. Now, there are some people, there are some situations where a loan for a specific thing for a short time just to get him, you know, through something, that could be fine. You know, a gift would be even better, but, you know, the loan could be fine. But there are other situations where loaning somebody money would not be good for him because he's a fool. It's not going to help him out. It's only going to prolong his foolishness for another week or two before he's in the same exact position again and he needs more money. All right, now let's look at when not to lend. When not to lend. This is very important. First of all, we should not lend money to people for unnecessary things or in situations which will make them worse off in the long run. So if somebody wants to buy a new car, buy a better car, and they already have a car. Maybe the car is an old clunker, it's an old piece of junk, but I'd like to have a better one. Never, ever, 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 ever loan money to somebody for that. That is completely insane. Now, it's another thing if you have a father who's a provider of the family and his old car blows up and he can't get to work anymore. You know, that's a different story. Because that could be a situation where, yes, he has the income, he can, you know, pay you back, and loaning him this money is just a means to an end. It's going to get him over the hump. You know, that would be a totally different situation. But I would wonder, though, in that situation, if your car blows up and you have $0 to fix it or replace it, what's going on with your budget and how are you going to repay this loan to me? Because if you have no money, that means your budget's screwed up, right? You're spending every penny you make, and how are you going to repay this loan? Or how, you know, we need to probably sit down, and I need to help you create a budget and learn how to manage your money so that you don't get into this situation again. And I talked about that. If you remember when I talked about giving to the poor, and I talked about, you know, putting criteria on it, putting stipulations on when you lend or when you give money to people, that if they're going to take your help, they need to take all your help. And that includes helping them learn how to fish, not just giving them a fish. But in general, I'd say you want to be cautious about lending money. H. Jackson Brown Jr. in his book, Life's Little Instruction Book, said, be cautious about lending money to friends. You might lose both. There's a lot of wisdom in that. Be cautious about lending money to friends. You might lose both. Shakespeare in Hamlet said this. I thought this was pretty good. Neither a borrower nor a lender be, for loan oft loses both itself and friend, and borrowing dulls the edge of husbandry. You see, it's not good to borrow money or to loan money, is what he's saying there. Because the loan, you might lose the money or you might lose the friend that you loaned it to. And borrowing is not good either. It dulls the edge of husbandry. It stops you from getting out there, getting busy, working, being frugal, being responsible, you know, that kind of thing. As I've said before, I think it's better to give someone money who's in need rather than to loan it to them. Loaning money to family changes the relationship from being family to being in a master-slave relationship. Proverbs 22 and verse 7. Yeah, definitely better, I think, to give the money, but to give it with stipulations. I'll give you this money, but you need to accept all my help. I'm going to help you get into a better financial situation so that you don't ever have to do this again. Proverbs 22 and verse 7. The rich ruleth over the poor, and the borrower is servant to the lender. And that doesn't matter if it's parents or, you know, child, parent, brother, sister, whatever. I mean, the borrower is servant to the lender, regardless of the relationship. And now all of a sudden, the relationship changes. Now it's master-servant, not father-son or mother-daughter or brother-sister or whatever. Thanksgiving dinner will not be the same. Imagine sitting at Thanksgiving dinner when you have either loaned or borrowed money from a family member sitting across the table from you. It's not the same anymore, is it? Now, in some cases, the person that loaned the money, he doesn't really care. He's forgotten about it. Not a big deal to him. But if the person that borrowed the money has any integrity at all, it's killing him that he owes somebody some money. It's killing him. He can't stand it. He didn't even want to be at Thanksgiving dinner because I know I owe so-and-so this money, and it's just killing me. I hate being in debt, right? Or it could go the other way around. The guy that borrowed the money didn't care at all, forgot all about it, doesn't care about paying it back, and the guy that loaned it to him is just seething inside because he wants his money back, right? Either way, it'll turn out, more than likely, it's going to turn out badly. And furthermore, loaning money to someone exacerbates his problem. It teaches a person that the solution to poor money management and debt and being in debt is going into more debt. That's what it teaches them, right? You take somebody that is asking for a loan, he's in bad financial shape because he more than likely has poor money management skills, and he probably already has debt, right? You're probably not the first person he's borrowed from. He's probably already maxed out his borrowing from banks and credit cards and whatever else, right? So what are you teaching him? You're teaching him the solution to poor money management and being in debt is going into more debt. That's not a good lesson. It just makes his problem worse. And I already said this, but if you can't afford to give someone money to help him, then you probably can't afford to loan it to him either, because there's a good chance he's not going to pay you back. All right, another rule, I think. This is my rule anyway. Do not loan money to your children for anything. Ever. Do not loan money to your children for anything ever. Make them save for things they want and then make them pay cash for it. Don't loan your children money. Loaning money to children teaches them to go in debt at an early age, right? I mean, can you imagine, say, you know, your 8-year-old son wants this toy and you say, well, you know, Johnny, I know you don't have the money for that. I know you haven't been doing any chores around the house. You haven't been trying to make any money. I'll loan you the money, though. I'll loan you the $20 for that toy, and then you do some work and you can pay me back. You know what you just taught little Johnny at 8 years old? Ah, when I want something, I go and borrow the money from somebody. Wow, you just made Johnny into a lifelong debt slave at 8 years old. That's the dumbest idea in the world. It teaches them that they don't need to work and save for what they want. When I want something, I just borrow the money from somebody else. And it also teaches them to desire instant gratification. I want that toy. Well, you have money for it? Well, no. Well, I'll loan you money. He didn't have to wait at all. Whatever he wanted, he got. And are you going to be surprised when he grows up and he's in credit card debt up to his eyeballs? He's in car loans up to his eyeballs. He's in, you know, consumer debt up to his eyeballs. Of course not. Because you taught him, when you want something, get it right now. Do not wait. You don't have to wait. Just borrow the money. Terrible. Terrible idea. And then also, another rule, do not loan money to fools who have demonstrated that they cannot manage money. Doing so will only exacerbate their problems. What they need is tough love, not a loan. Never, ever, ever. You have somebody that can't manage money, you are an enabler. You are part of the problem when you loan money to somebody who can't manage money. Don't do it. And I would advise you to review the section on giving to the poor where I talked about giving gifts on conditions, you know, taking all your help, not just part of your help. And then lastly, do not loan money to people who could have paid you back but refused to. You need to teach them a lesson. I would never loan money to somebody who could have paid me back but just didn't, just refused to. Nope. I don't care how much money it was. I don't care if I loaned you $10, you know, to buy a hamburger at the convenience store because you didn't have any money in your wallet or something like that. You don't pay me that back when you could, and then you want to borrow more money? No way. No way. I am not rewarding bad behavior. I'm not rewarding wickedness like that. No, don't do that. Anything that you support, you'll get more of. Anything that you subsidize, you'll get more of. So next time, we're going to pick it up, and I'm going to talk about interest, loaning money at interest. And this is an interesting topic. There are some people that think that interest is evil, because they've read a couple of verses in the Bible that talk about usury being a bad thing, and they think that interest is always evil and always wrong. And if you think that, you're going to find out that you're wrong, because the Bible actually does allow for loaning money on interest under certain circumstances. So we'll talk about that next week, Lord willing.